26. If you have a bulletin, you'll notice there's a white insert there, and there is an outline for the sermon this morning. Matthew chapter 26, and we begin reading at verse 27. Here we find Jesus in the upper room, and we read God's Word. Then he took a cup, gave thanks, and offered it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until the day when I drink it anew with you in my Father's kingdom." And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus told them, "This very night you will all fall away on account of me, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered.' But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." And Peter replied, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." "I tell you the truth," Jesus answered, "this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." But Peter declared, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the other disciples said the same. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go there and pray." And he took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." And going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Could you men not keep watch with me for 1 hour?" he asked Peter. "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." And then to verse 47. "And while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. 'The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him.' And going at once to Jesus, Judas said, 'Greetings, Rabbi,' and kissed him. And Jesus replied, 'Friend, do what you came for.'" And then to verse 57. "Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance, right up to the courtyard of the high priest. He entered and sat down with the guards to see the outcome." And then to verse 69. "Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. 'You also were with Jesus of Galilee,' she said. But he denied it before them all. 'I don't know what you're talking about,' he said. Then he went out to the gateway where another girl saw him and said to the people there, 'This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth.' And he denied it again with an oath, 'I don't know the man.' After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, 'Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away.' And then he began to call down curses on himself. And he swore to them, I don't know the man. And immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. The night of Peter's betrayal was a night that is filled with pain for Jesus, as we have already noticed here. It begins in the upper room where Jesus sees the bread and the wine, and they begin to remind him of that death that he must die. And sitting there among friends is one who is already plotting to betray him. To betray him for 30 pieces of silver, the price of a slave. The pain and the agony continue, as we noted, when he goes to the garden. There he struggles with God. He struggles with God in order that God perhaps would show him another way to achieve salvation without going the way of the cross and the way of hell. From the garden he is taken to the Jewish Supreme Court, headed by the high priest and attended by 70 elite members of the nation with a history that went back all the way to Moses in the wilderness. This Supreme Court, this court of Moses, would condemn the very one that Moses pointed to. The irony is tragic. But perhaps there is no more bitter pain than the pain of being denied by Peter that night. And that's a pain that even you children know about a little bit. To know what it's like when everybody leaves you, and even your best friend, and there's nobody that stands behind you or next to you. That brings tears to your eyes, doesn't it? When you're all alone and nobody sticks up for you. Before we talk about that pain that Jesus suffered, let's just look at the road that led to that pain. The road that Peter walked. The road that led to that bitter denial and that stab in Jesus' back. Peter's fall really begins with the first great road sign that says pride. That's the first sign along the road of Peter's fall. Peter really says to Jesus, look, it won't happen to me. I'm not like the rest of the people. I can take it. I'm tough. I will stand for you when everybody else falls. You remember when they left the upper room, and in that 31st verse, Jesus said of Matthew 26, he says, this very night you will all fall away from me, for it is written, the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. You notice that it says there, it is written. But Peter says, I don't care what's written. I don't care what's written. I tell you, it won't happen to me. Because I'm not like the other ones. Even if they all fall away, I will be there. I will die for you rather than deny you. That was the beginning of Peter's downfall, perhaps. Thinking that he was not like other people. He was tough, and that he was genuine, and his faith was strong, and that he didn't have to listen to God's warnings. He that thinketh he standeth, take heed lest he fall. We know about that, don't we? We know about that sin of pride that says we're not like others, that says we're not going to get caught. that says we're not going to get hooked, that we're only going to go so far that we're just toying with it. But we won't fall. We know about that. But there's something else as you go along this road of Peter and his fall. You'll notice another sign, and it is the sign of prayerlessness. It's a big billboard that stands there along that road. And that's obvious, isn't it? Because someone who is as tough and as cool as Peter doesn't need to bring God into the picture, doesn't need prayer. Peter was far too confident for that. Jesus warns him, Jesus urges him in Gethsemane to watch and pray. Jesus had warned him about falling. Jesus has spoken to him about the devil wanting to sift him like wheat. But Peter was a man of strength. He didn't need those warnings and he didn't need the prayer. And he was so confident he fell asleep. And we see a familiar pattern too, don't we? Not unlike many of us. It begins with God's warnings, maybe through the Bible, maybe through a parent, maybe even through a preacher or a teacher. We say, hey, don't worry about me. I'm cool. I don't need to be warned. I'm tough. I can take it. I can stand on my own two feet. I don't know if there's anyone here this morning who has recently said that, but I want you to look at proud, prayerless Peter and the tragic fall that he experienced, the tragic sorrow. But there's a third sign along that road of Peter's fall, and that is the one that says, half a commitment. Half a commitment. You notice in verse 58 of chapter 26. But Peter followed at a distance. Peter followed at a distance. You wonder what really happened to Peter. A couple of minutes later, before this, he had his sword out and he was ready to fight. In fact, he had started already. And now you find him following Jesus at a distance. And the only thing that you can imagine has happened is that he had time to think and to reflect on the cost of what it would mean to follow Jesus. You know, some of us have done some rather rash things perhaps in our lifetime too, maybe some very bold things, and we've done something, we say, you know, I don't know how I had the nerve to do it. I wasn't scared. I didn't think about the consequences. I just rushed in and did it. And there are some people in the church who have the same experience. They have maybe had a stirring sermon or a stirring musical concert or gone to a crusade. And somehow or other they get all enthused about it and the adrenaline runs and the tears come down their faces and they raise their hands and they make the commitment, but they haven't really counted the cost. That's the way it was with Peter. He really hadn't counted the cost. And when he realized that he didn't necessarily have to make that commitment, that total commitment, he backed away because he loved himself more than he loved Jesus. That's obvious, isn't it? So we find him following Jesus a long way off. Perfect bait. For the devil. And I often think when I read this passage, it's a passage that fringe members of the church ought to read with a great deal of fear. And they ought to read it often. Those who are following Jesus at a distance, may fool themselves by thinking that somehow they really love the Lord, and they may say, but you know, it really doesn't make any difference if we are church members or not, because our love is really there. But the commitment is missing. They're following a long way off. And you'll find that the least provocation will cause you to pull out in a huff. And the least demand of God will cause you to betray Him. Because children, you know, if you don't stand for Jesus, you're going to fall for the devil. That's just the way it is. If you don't stand for Jesus, you're going to fall for the devil. But the devil wasn't through with Peter yet, was he? There was another road sign along the way. You'll find that too in your life. If you are half committed, you're going to find exactly what Peter found. He found his fellowship and his friends among the ungodly. And you know, if you're with the wrong friends, you have to make a choice sooner or later. You're either going to have to curse Christ, or you're going to be ostracized, but you can't remain bosom friends with unbelievers. That's an impossibility. Now, the devil doesn't put it so crassly, I mean, to say that, look, you've got to curse Christ or get out. I mean, he didn't say that to Peter. He didn't say to Peter, look, curse Christ and be done with it. But the devil was much more subtle than that, like he was with Eve. He didn't come to Eve and he didn't say to Eve, look, did God say that you couldn't have one of these cotton-picking trees? He didn't say that. That isn't the way he came. And that's not the way he came to Peter either when Peter opened that gate going into the palace grounds. It wasn't like a lion leaping out at him with fangs bared and claws outstretched. No, it was a little maid who lifted up a lantern to see his face and said, "Hey, mister, I don't think I know you. Are you one of his disciples?" And how simple it was to say, "No." Who? After all, it was not really a matter of principle. And she wouldn't understand anyhow. Why get into a big argument for no good reason at all? You see, that's how the devil got his foot in the door. But of course, he isn't through yet. He has just begun. He's got his foot in the door, but he is not done yet. Having told one lie, there will come another question, and there will come another lie, until John records the final step must be taken. And someone comes and recognizes him from the garden and says, surely you were there. I saw you. I saw you with the sword. And then the old Peter comes out, that old fisherman, and he cries with oath upon sinful oath, "I don't know that bastard." And the cock crows. And the break is complete. Now, maybe there's someone here this morning who hasn't gone quite that far. But you find the road signs there, the pride, the prayerlessness, the lack of commitment, fellowship with ungodly friends. You've already made some minor adjustments. And Jesus looks at you. And he is wounded. But go with Peter. And weep bitterly and become his disciple. So that you don't commit spiritual suicide. Like Judas did. And then maybe you say, but will Jesus accept my confession? And you see, that brings us to the second part of that story. The most wonderful part at all, because you see, when we get into the part of Jesus' pain, then we find out that it's not so much really a matter of Peter. It's not a story about Peter, but it's a story about Peter's master. It's a story about Jesus. It's a story about the gospel, about the good news. You see, the devil is really after Jesus. That's really who he's after. Peter is just a little sidelight, but he is really after Jesus. And then you begin to think about it, and you begin to think about that whole night being a night that is filled with the coldness of hell itself. You just feel it wherever you read. There's that chilling presence of the devil. And Peter's denial is just part of that. Maybe we should put it differently. Peter's denial is the climax of the devil's work that night. You see, he began with Judas there, one of the 12, one of those sitting at the table, one of those that he trusted, one of those that was privy to all the things that Jesus taught and did. There sat Judas who heard all the teachings and all the miracles and all the explanations of all the parables. And then the one that Peter, that Jesus actually promoted to be the treasurer among that group of insiders. Out of all the people of Israel, he chose Judas, along with 11 others. And he even warned him about that demon that lurked in his heart. And for those blessings, Judas responds by betraying him for 30 pieces of silver, the price of a slave. And then he does it in the most demeaning way. The one that I kiss is the enemy. Say, you sense the demonic. And then Jesus is taken to Caiaphas. Now, this is not the justice of the peace. This is not a little country court that's sitting in session. This is the Supreme Court of the land. It has the cream of Bible scholars there. 70 of them. Bringing you right back to the time of Moses in the wilderness. And they had to do in Israel what Moses and his 70 elders did in the wilderness. They had to apply the law of God to the situation. They had to root out heresy and they had to expose the truth. And above all, they had to point the people to Jesus, to the Christ. And here, those that court of Moses, instead of maintaining the truth, bring in false witnesses and put Jesus under oath as if he is a liar. And they say to him, we know about Moses and we know about prophets, but we will blindfold you and see if you know whose spit is running down your face. Now prophesy to us, you false prophet. Take the swine to Pilate. But the devil isn't through yet. There is one voice that Jesus must still hear. The voice of Peter. The voice of the rock, The voice of the one to whom Jesus said, I give you the keys of the kingdom. The one who confessed Jesus and to whom Jesus spoke so enthusiastically, blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed it to you, but my Father in heaven. Henceforth your name shall be called Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Remember that prophecy? Now the devil leads Jesus out on that deck. He must hear something. He must hear a conversation that's going on in that fire, around that fire pit below. He must hear especially one voice. As the Lord lives and may He strike me dead, I don't know that radical. And how the devil must sneer. Did you hear that, Jesus? Did you hear that? Even He has deserted you. The rock! Didn't you say that? Didn't you say something about the church and about the gates of hell not prevailing against it? I tell you, it was just a maid that confronted Him. You're a dreamer. You're a demented dreamer. What a laugh! There is no kingdom. You don't even have 12 disciples. You don't even have a friend. How Jesus' eyes must burn. And how His heart must break. And how His spirit must sink. I don't even know the man. But as Isaiah said, the lamb is led to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. There's no rebuke. There is no change of mind, only a look of pity and compassion. And how truly we sing, none of the ransomed ever knew how deep were the waters crossed, nor how dark, was the night that the Lord passed through ere He found His sheep that was lost. And do you still ever wonder whether the Lord will receive your confession? Father, we thank You this morning that You have led us through that dark night, in order that we might see the brilliance of Your love. Help us not to forget it ever. Amen.